Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on You Can Beat City Hall when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if a plumber said to you, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said to you that he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now, listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor, a law professor, at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he had to say about these young budding lawyers. He said, quote, "It's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed." He said it's worse than that. Most students actually graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate from this law school without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. Now, that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct, 417-273-4967. Hey, you can't beat City Hall. It's an old adage. I heard that from the time I was a little kid. You can't beat City Hall. What they're saying is you can't beat the system. You can't beat the insurance company or zoning and planning, the building department, the EPA, the IRS, the highway cops, the insurance companies, the bureaucrats in particular. So don't even try. Well, you know, if you follow that line of reasoning to its ultimate conclusion, you can't ever win at anything in life, can you? Because once you're convinced that you can't win, you don't try. And if you don't try, you can't succeed. Now, can you? Now, when I was a young boy, I had aspirations of going to West Point. I looked at the statistical odds of being selected to go to West Point. For instance, in our congressional district up in Northern California, it was the first congressional district, And our representative, who was going to have to appoint me or give me the appointment to West Point, was a Democrat, and my family were all Republicans. That didn't strike me as being very good odds at getting appointed or getting nominated to go to West Point. Then you have to have a pretty good school record. I mean, you know, you got to have pretty good grades, you know. And I didn't have pretty good grades. I was just kind of an average Joe six-pack kind of kid. And so I took a look at it and I said, you know, if I waste a lot of time, effort, and energy trying to get into West Point, I think I'm going to be bitterly disappointed. So I never tried. And you guessed it, I never succeeded. Now, there's some things in life that you're probably not going to succeed at, that the odds or the chances are so remote. You know, like being an astronaut. You know, you're watching TV and some television reporter is talking to a bunch of kids and they say, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? And he says, I want to be a fireman. I want to be a policeman. I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a senator, a representative, or president of the United States. You know, those are all jobs that have to be filled by somebody. But is it going to be filled by you? I mean, you know, we've only had about 42 or 3 or 4 presidents, you know. And that's in 225 years. So your chances of being selected as president of the United States, you know, aren't very good. John Kerry wanted to be president of the United States, but there was only room for one guy at the top. Of course, if you don't try, you're never going to succeed. So trying is, or getting involved is certainly a very important part of the process, but, you know, I like to look at things a little more pragmatically. I don't think I'm going to waste a lot of time, effort, and energy trying to become president or senator or representative. Those jobs aren't impossible, but they're probably not very likely for the average Joe Sixpack. So when we're talking about beating City Hall, there are some things in life that aren't worth taking on. The statistical odds are really running against you. For instance, we would all like to go into the casino and start playing on the crap table and win $50,000 and walk out. I mean, just once in your life. You know, every time you go in there, you lose. And just once in your life, you'd like to beat the casino. But you see, boys and girls, the reality of it is, it's a fool's errand to start with. It's like running for president. Yeah, it's true. There are some people that walk out of there winners, but the lottery, for instance, is 84 million to one. Out of every 84 million lottery tickets they sell, they got one winner. Well, I took a look at that and I said, you know, that sounds like a fool's errand to me, so I think I'll back out. I've never tried to win the lottery, and I have never won the lottery, and I've never bought a lottery ticket in my life, and if I live to be 110, I'm not going to buy a lottery ticket, so I'm never going to win the lottery. But I'm never going to lose playing at the lottery either, because you see, there's winners and there's losers. I didn't try to get into West Point, but I'm not one of the bitter losers that worked so hard and failed. I'm not one of the bitter losers like John Kerry or Richard Nixon or somebody else that tried to become president of the United States and then failed. Although, you know, Tricky Dick, he failed once, but he kept after it, and then he finally succeeded. Now, all of us, from time to time, have run-ins with the highway patrol, or zoning and planning, or an insurance company. And you know, since nearly everybody buys insurance, wouldn't you like to beat the insurance company just once? I mean, you know, you the highway cop gets you time after time after time, but wouldn't you like to just beat the highway cop one time? Or maybe the IRS, or the EPA, or the building department, or some bureaucrat somewhere, sometime, someplace. Wouldn't you like to just come out winners? I mean, you're in the game, whether you like it or not. You're in the driving game, you're in the building game, you're in the tax game. And you're always told that you can't win. I'm not sure that that's necessarily true, because I've run across a lot of people in my life that have beat City Hall. And they tell me their stories, and when I hear the story, I jot it down in my mind, and I say, you know, that was worth learning. That was worth knowing. I wonder if sometime in the future that might come into play, and I might need to do that. I might need that little trick or that little piece of information. So if you're like I am and you want to beat City Hall just once, well, tune in and let me show you a couple of neat tricks. You know, a license is like checking into a mental hospital. Yeah, that's right. If you checked into a mental hospital, and then you said, well, I want to beat the guards here at the mental hospital. You know, you're behind the eight ball to start with. That's not a very good place to start as a patient in a mental hospital. And yet, when you get your driver's license and you go out on the highway, you're like a mental patient in a mental hospital trying to do battle with the guards. They've just got everything working for them, and you've just got everything working against you. You go into the crap table, and you wanna win, but the odds are against you. It's true that you can put $20 on the pass line and throw the dice, and sometimes a 7 comes up and you win, but you know, sometimes you lose, and you lose more often than you win. So at least at the crap table, you're winning some of the time, but when you get a traffic ticket, did you notice that you lose all the time? I mean, the average guy can't win. He gets a traffic ticket and he just loses every single time. Well, that's because a license puts you behind the eight ball. Now, my boy Ted was in high school. And one day he came to me and he said, Dad, it's time for school next Monday, and we've got to register for school. And I've got to have an adult go up there with me to register for school. And I said to my boy Ted, I said, do you really want to register for school? And he said, not really. And then I said, well, would you like to put on a little legal test here just to see whether or not you can go to school without registering. I mean, you know, normal people realize that if you want to go to school, you have to register. You go in and you sign some papers, and you get what they call registration, and then you go to school. Well, have you ever thought about going to school without registering? Has it ever piqued your curiosity? Well, it did mine. So my boy Ted was game, and I said, well, let's go up and let's take a look at this registration form. And then let's decide whether or not we want to sign it. Now, we were in Idaho at the time, and it was a requirement there in Idaho that, you know, until you're 16 years old, you've got to go to high school. I mean, you got to go to public school. You got to go to school someplace. It doesn't have to be public school. It could be private school. It could be homeschool, but he's got to be educated, and that's the law. And so you go up to the public school, and they say, here, fill out these papers and sign them. But what would happen if you didn't sign the papers? Have you ever thought about that? So we went in, and they handed us the papers, and we took a look at them, and they want your name, address, and Social Security number, and phone number, and, you know, where do you work? And there's a lot of information on here, kind of a standard form. Americans are pretty used to signing all of these standard forms. They just fill them out and sign their names. And so we filled it out. You know, my boy's name was Ted, and he lived at 1205 North Roosevelt Street, and so we filled the whole thing out. I got down to the bottom line, and it was a place there for Ted to sign it. And then there was a place for a parent or guardian to sign it. We just left those blank, and we gave it to this nice lady, and she looked at it, and she said, this is fine, but you have to sign it. And she handed it back, and she said, here, sir, just sign right there, and here, Ted, you have to sign right there. And she put an X right there where we're supposed to sign. And so I looked at Ted, and Ted looked at me, and we looked at the lady, and I said to the lady, I said, you know, I really don't want to sign that. And she said, well, you have to. You can't register your son for school unless that's signed. And I said, well, that's probably true, but I'm not really all that keen about registering him for school. And she said, well, you have to. It's the law. I said, well, we're here to comply with the law. And she said, well, you have to sign it. Well, now just hang on a minute here, lady. The law requires that we send our children to public school, and here we are. This is public school, and we're here to go to school. But that doesn't mean that I want to sign a contract with the state of Idaho. And she said, well, this isn't a contract. And I said, well, if it isn't a contract, what is it? And she says, it's a registration. So I said, well, could you tell me what the difference is between a contract and a registration? Well, a contract requires you to do things and you get something for it, and a registration is something different than that. You see, this is just to sign him up for school. I said, okay. I said, is this an offer? And she didn't know what an offer was. And I said, well, if I sign this, would I be accepting this registration? She said, yeah. Well, then, are you offering to educate my child if I sign this registration form? And she said, well, yes, yes. I'll say, well, there's an offer and there's an acceptance if I sign it. Okay, now, is there any consideration on this contract? And she said, well, this isn't a contract, but she said, well, what do you mean by consideration? I said, well, is there something that I have to do? And she said, well, Ted has to go to school every day. You have to make sure that he attends school. And I said, and if I don't see to it that he attends school, is there some punishment? And she said, yeah, that's truancy, and yeah, there's punishment. I said, okay. So there's a penal clause then in this registration, isn't there? And she said, well, yeah, that's what the law requires. I said, okay. So I said, now, is there any time element involved in this registration? She said, well, it's for the school year 1980. I said, okay. So the school year is 180 days, and it's in the year 1980, and this is the 1980 school year, and you're making me an offer, and you want me to accept it, and the consideration on this contract and the penal clause, I got to pay taxes to send this kid to school, and he's got some rules and regulations. You see, there's all these school policies that he has to follow, and I said, we don't want to do any of that. And we're only doing this because the law requires it. In other words, we're doing this under threat, duress, and coercion. You're forcing us to do this. And we don't want to do that. And she said, it's the law. I said, okay, well, we're here to obey the law. I'm just not here to make an agreement with you. I'm here to comply, but I don't want to agree with you. And she said, well, he can't graduate from high school. I said, well, okay. Well, he can't go to driver's education without signing this. He can't get a student body card. And she listed a number of things that he couldn't get and couldn't do. And I said, that's fine. That's fine. We don't care about graduation. We don't care about driver's education. We don't care about school student body cards. She went over and talked to some people and came back. And she said, well, we'll have to call you and let you know. I said, okay. So on Monday morning, and this is on about a Thursday or Friday, Monday morning, my boy Ted was at school. And do you know they admitted him to school? He went to school the whole school year without ever registering. Now, there's a very important legal reason for this. The law is called the law of general applicability, the truancy law, and it applies to everybody. But just because you've got a law that requires that you go to public school doesn't mean that you have to sign a contract with the public school or register for the public school or do jack squat. It's like being taken to jail and they say, well, sign this piece of paper. And What if you didn't sign it? I've been to jail a time or two, and I can go to jail and never sign anything going in, never sign anything going out. Now, of course, people oftentimes will threaten you, and they'll say, well, you know, he can't graduate from school. It came up a couple of years later. We did this for the high school career of my boy, and they said, well, he can't graduate. And I said, well, I said, he's going to go to school here every day, and he's going to take his tests, and if he passes all of his tests, if you discriminate against him and you let everybody else graduate, but you don't let him graduate, and if you're taking money, and I assume you're getting paid $58 a day for my boy Ted attending school here just like every other kid, and then when graduation comes up and you don't let him graduate, I think we're going to have some litigation. I think we're going to have a discriminatory policy against a suspect classification of persons, and those are the kind of persons that don't want to sign contracts with the state of Idaho. He went to school his senior year, and when he got to the end of school, he graduated with everybody else. So we were threatened a number of times, but then, you know, there's nothing to sue about until you actually get to graduation and you suffer a damage. And there was no damage. They said there was going to be a damage, but there wasn't any. They said he can't go to driver's education without that. And that was true. He went all through high school and never went to driver's education a day. And they said, well, you can't graduate unless you've completed driver's education. Well, it's not true in Idaho. He graduated. He never went to driver's ed. And they didn't discriminate against him, and he didn't sign any registration. Now, there's an example of beating City Hall. And you might sit there and say, well, big deal, you know. So what did you gain? Well, I gained the satisfaction of knowing that I don't have to sign a contract, and that you can't threaten and intimidate me. That's worth something. My self-respect is worth a little something. And then just beating you at your own game was well worth it. And it just teaches us all a little lesson that a license is like checking into a mental hospital, and you ought to be able to live your life from birth to death and never sign your name a single time. Now, I sign my name from time to time. There was a contract came up here not too long ago, and I wanted to sell a piece of property, and I signed some papers. But I signed them because I wanted to sign them, not because somebody came to me and said, you have to, or if you don't, you know, we're going to punish you or throw you in jail. I kind of like people that want me to sign something to present it to me and say, now, Mr. Gordon, does that meet with your approval? And if it does, would you sign it? And then I look at it and I say, well, yeah, that meets with my approval. I agree with you that the terms and conditions that you've proposed in this agreement is something that I can live with. It's something that I want to perform. It's something that I want to do with you. And I'm doing this of my own free will and volition. And so here's my signature, and I sign it and date it, and I'm just happy as a clam at high tide. What I'm kind of objecting to is people that just stick pieces of paper in front of me and say, sign here. And then when you say, geez, could you tell me why? And they say, it's the law. And when you say, well, I don't want to sign that. And they say, well, we're going to put you in jail, or we're going to do something really nasty and wicked and awful and evil to you if you don't sign that. And I kind of resent that. I don't like it. And one day I woke up and I said, you know, I'm not going to let people threaten me, intimidate me, or bully me into signing anything. And that includes the state, the insurance companies, and everybody else. And so sometimes people say, well, I want this. So you go to the bank, and the bank says, well, do you want this loan? Yeah. Well, then sign these papers. And so one day I woke up and I said, you know, do I really need to do business with the bank? And why am I borrowing money from the bank? Why don't I have my own money? So one day I woke up and I said, no, I think I'll get some of my own money. And I got some of my own money. And now that I've got money, I don't need to borrow money from the bank. The only people that need to borrow money from the bank are losers that can't make a living. And so they go to the bank to borrow money I mean, after all, you have to pay the money back, and you got to pay interest on it. So if I borrowed $1,000 from the bank, I'd have to pay them back about, you know, $1,100, wouldn't I? Well, instead of paying the bank $1,100 for $1,000, why don't you go out and earn $1,000 and then spend the $1,000 and save $100? And I figured that that's a better way to do business and a better way to beat the banks. There's another thing that I brought to your attention here the other day, and that's credit cards. Talking about credit. The average guy in America who has a credit card, well, I shouldn't say average, I think it's 70%. About 30% of people pay their credit card bill every month. And about 70% of people don't, and they make the revolving payments. And I pointed out, too, that it takes 25 years to pay off those payments. And that you'll pay 112% over the 25 years. So over this period of time, let's say you buy something, you know, for $100, and you buy it on a credit card, you have to pay $212 for that item that you could have paid cash $100 for. So I said, how can I beat the credit card company? I mean, I'm not talking about how can I get a credit card and then beat them out of their money, but how can I beat the credit card company and the credit card system and this credit system? And I said, you know, if I paid cash every time I walked in, I want to buy something, I'd do something a little bit different. We have a sales tax here in our state. It's about 7%, 8%, I think it is, around 8%. So when I want to buy something for $100, it costs me $108 to buy that. And if I bought it on a credit card and I paid over time, it would cost me $112 to buy that $100 item, or $212 total. And so here's what I do. I walk into the store and I look at these items that I've got over here that I want to buy, and I put them out there, and I say, well, what would you sell those items to me for if I gave you a credit card? And the guy says, well, I'll sell it to you for $100. And I say, well, you're going to have to pay the credit card company 5% when I hand you that credit card, aren't you? And he says, yeah. And I said, you got that built right into the price of that, don't you? And he said, yeah. So I said, now, if I were to pay you in cash, you wouldn't have to pay that $5. And therefore, you could sell that for $95 if it weren't for that credit card fee. And the guy will say, well, yeah, that's right. So there's $95. And I said, now, you're going to write up a receipt for this, aren't you? And he said, yeah. And I said, now, if I paid you cash, C-A-S-H, if I just handed you $90 and walked out of your store with that good in my hand, without a receipt, would you sell that to me for $90? And you know, about, probably 6, 7, maybe even 8 times out of 10, the guy will say, well, yeah, I'd do that. All right, so now let's watch what we're going to do here. Here's the way to beat City Hall. This is the way to beat the credit card companies and get paid, you know, get paid for doing it. Number one, I walk in and I want to buy $100 worth of goods. It could be an automobile for $2,000. It could be a motorcycle. It could be, you know, feed at the feed store or whatever you want to buy. You know, just walk in and say, well, how much for this? And you say, okay, it's in a pile over here, and the price is $100. Take off $5 for the credit card, and then take off the 8% for the sales tax. Now that's $8. That's 8 and 5 is 13. Just round it off to 90. That's a $10 discount. Got that? 10%. And you pay cash. That saves you 122% on the transaction by not using a credit card. Now, if you're one of those people who can use a credit card and then pay your balance every month so that you don't incur any interest, well, you know, more power to you. Credit cards is good as cash. But the guy at the store isn't going to listen to you when you say, I'm going to give you a credit card. Because he has to pay $5 on that $100 purchase. Whether he likes it or not, it's 5%. And that sales tax. You know, you might be able to ding him for the sales tax if you pay him cash, but if you pay him with a credit card, he's got a paper trail there, and he's not very inclined to want to pay that sales tax himself, or to screw the government out of that sales tax or take an inventory shrinkage. So you just test that little theory out there. If you want to beat the credit card companies, if you want to beat City Hall, pay cash. God, you'll love it. And let me give you a reminder here. We're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about you can beat City Hall. One time, I rented a building. Actually, it was an office, series of offices, in a building on Chinden Boulevard in Garden City, Idaho. And the utilities, when you open a business, cost you a lot of money. Now, I just closed out my Atlantis Manufacturing Company. And my telephone bill at Atlantis Manufacturing cost $500 a month. You see, a business telephone versus a home phone has about a $400 difference or more in the base price per month. And I noticed that the power company did the same thing. In other words, the power company at my home would charge me $50 a month or so much per kilowatt hour, but at the factory, they charged me more. And the garbage company did that. And the gas company and the water company. All of the utilities cost more at the business. Well, I guess it makes sense. I'm not criticizing the utilities or the government or anybody else. Maybe businesses should pay more than residential users. Somehow, though, it doesn't seem right that the garbage company, when they're hauling my garbage down at the factory, charge me more money than when they haul my garbage at home. I mean, garbage is garbage. Shouldn't you charge me so much a ton or so much a can or so much a container or so much, and shouldn't we all pay the same? And the same thing with the phone company. Why is it that the phone company gouges the businessman, or how come they give the residential user a free ride. Why not charge everybody the same price? You know, it's $25 a month for a phone, or it's $50 a month, or whatever it is. And that's your base price plus 5 cents a minute. Let's give you an illustration. Let's suppose you came here to the law school, and you walked in, and you said, I'd like to go to law school. And I said, well, what's your occupation? And you say, well, I'm a doctor. Oh, well, if you're a doctor, the fee is $5,000. And another guy, he walks in, and then he's your buddy John, and he says, well, I'd like to go to law school here, too. What's the fee? And I say, well, what do you do for a living? And he says, well, I'm a plumber. And I say, oh, well, the fee for you is $4,000. Third guy comes in, and he says, well, I'd like to go to your law school. And I say, well, what do you do for a living? And he says, well, I'm just a roustabout working on a construction site, and I get paid minimum wage for cleaning up. And I say, oh, well, in that case, for you, the fee is $1,500. Now, as a doctor, a plumber, or as a minimum wage earner, that's good for the minimum wage earner. He says, well, I'm only going to pay $1,500. And the plumber says, well, I'm going to get a $1,000 discount. And the doctor says, well, why is it that I get stiffed for $5,000? I mean, am I going to learn 20% more than the plumber, or 3.5 times more than the construction worker? I don't think so. I'm only going to present the same material. You're going to get the same discs, the same paperwork. You're going to get the same story, the same information. You're all attending the same class. I think everybody can say, well, that doesn't seem to be very fair to me. Well, I would agree. And in fact, I don't do that. I charge everybody the same price. I don't care if you're rich or poor. You know, I've had people come here that are millionaires. And they want to know, well, what's the price? Well, here's the price. And the guy says, well, that's cheap. Well, yeah, you know, $5,000 isn't very much money to a guy that's got a million. $5,000 is quite a bit to a plumber, though. And it's a hell of a lot of money, you know, if you're a minimum wage earner. And so you charge everybody the same because that's what we call equality. You know, it's equitable. Well, I took a look at Garden City's policy on this office building, and their policy on the water was if you're a business, you have to pay a $50 deposit, but if you're a resident, you don't have to pay any deposit at all. If you're a business, the phone company says you got to pay $500 a month for a telephone, but if you're a resident, in those days it was 27 versus 500. Power company says you got to pay $175 deposit if you're a business, but if you're a resident, you don't have to pay any deposit. And I looked at that and I said, you know, it looks like to me that instead of renting this office, I should rent a residence. So I took a look at the zoning and planning ordinance of Garden City, and I found out that Garden City, Idaho, zoned business out of residential. In other words, you couldn't conduct a business up in Bellwood Estates, but they hadn't reciprocated. They hadn't done the same thing for businesses. They didn't zone residential out of the business district. Chinden Boulevard, you know, is right in the heart of Dixie there in Garden City, Idaho. And so I said, well, I'm not going to conduct a business here. I'm going to conduct a school, and I'm going to live here in this office. So I went to the phone company, and I said, I'd like to put a phone in here at this address. And she said, oh, yeah, okay. And that'll be $500. And I said, no, it's a residence. And she said, but this is an office building. And I said, well, that's true. It is an office building. There's a uniform store on one side, and then there's this office that I'm renting here. But I'm converting this office into a residence. And if you'll look at the zoning in Garden City, it doesn't zone residences out. And she said, well, what kind of a business are you going to conduct here? And I said, I'm not going to conduct any business. I'm going to live there. And she said, but that's very expensive living. You could rent a house for $400 a month, and that office is costing you $1,200 a month. I said, yeah, that's right. I'm going to pay $1,200 a month, but look at the convenience. I'm right across the street from the Outlaw restaurant. I'm right on Chinden Boulevard. You know, there's something to be said about the convenience, you know, of the location. You know, in real estate, it's location, location, location. And she got a little huffy with me, and she said, well, you can't come in here and say that you're going to rent this office. And I said, well, yes, I can say that, and I just told you that. And I said, I'm going to rent this office, and I'm going to live there. That's a residence, and it's not a business. I'm not conducting any business. I'm not affecting any trade, commerce, business, or industry, and I want a residence phone. And if you don't give it, then we're going to have to litigate. Well, I went back, and they talked to their legal staff, their legal department, and they came to a conclusion, well, if you're not going to use it for an office, and if you're not operating a business, I guess you can qualify as a residence. But if we find out later on that you're running some kind of a business here, you know, we're gonna shut your telephone off. I said, okay, do that. And so they put my telephone in. I went down to the power company, the gas company, the garbage company, and they all agreed that that was a residence. So I went down to Garden City, and they said, well, if you're a business, you got to pay a $50 deposit. Now, I couldn't very well go down to Garden City and say to them, well, I'm running a business, here's your $50, after I've already been to the phone company, the gas company, the electric company, and the garbage company and told them that it's a residence. Can I? I mean, you know, you've got to keep your story straight, don't you? So I went into Garden City. Now, it happens that Garden City, which is a municipal corporation, a little city, operates the water company. It's not, you know, the Ajax Municipal Water Company. It's the Garden City Water Company. They don't charge very much. I think it was $4.50 a month. You paid $9 every other month. The billing came out twice a month. They take care of your sewer and water. And for $9 a month, it's no big expense. But they wanted that $50 deposit. And I couldn't give them a $50 deposit without admitting that it was an office of business, in which case then the phone company is going to say you got to pay $500 a month, which is $6,000 a year. Now, when you're talking about $6,000 a year, you're talking about some bucks. When you're talking about a $50 water deposit, you know, that doesn't amount to very much. But you got to keep your story straight, boys and girls. So they turned on the water, and I paid the water bill in advance. I think it was 3 months. I think I gave them $27. So here, let me pay the water bill up front. So now my water bill is paid up in advance, and telephone's turned on, and everybody's working away, and some time goes by. I don't remember if it was a month or 6 months, but some time went by, and one day I went to get a drink of water, and I went to the sink, and I turned on the faucet, and there was no water. Well, you know, I'm an old-timey plumber. And so, you know, when you go to plumbing school and you ask the instructor, you know, what happens when you turn on the faucet and no water comes out? And he says, well, the first thing you check is the water meter. Go right out to the water meter, and that's where you start. If it's on the other side of the water meter, you call the utility company, and if it's on your side of the water meter, you turn the water meter off, and then you start looking for water leaking someplace. So I went right out to the meter, and I lifted the cover off out of the sidewalk, and I looked down inside, and based upon my expert training and my expert knowledge, I looked at the valve, and then I could see that it was turned off. And so I went in, got a crescent wrench, and I came back out, and I turned it back on. And then I went back to the sink, and sure enough, that was it. No big deal. Just water valve was turned off, was all. Now, I'm getting a little ahead of the story here, because some guy at the water company called me on the telephone and said, get down here and pay your $50, Buster. He was kind of rude, too. He wasn't really customer-oriented. And when people get rude to me in my younger days, I tend to get a little bit rude back, you know. People that used bad words on me got bad words back. And so, anyway, we didn't hit it off very well when he called me on the phone, so I followed it up with a letter. That's part of my legal training. I follow everything up with a letter. I received your phone call today at about 3:22, and our conversation consisted of, and I told you, and you said, and that's where we left. So some more time went by, and I went to get a drink of water, and I turned on the faucet, and there was no water. So this time I said, well, those darn kids, you know, I figured it's got to be some darn teenage kids. And so I went over, and I got a crescent wrench, and I walked out, and I opened up the cover, and I looked down inside, and the water meter was gone. I mean, they had the valve shut off, and they took the water meter out. Now, I could bridge across. You know, I'm a plumber, and I could have tied in those two lines there, you know. But if you do that, then you're stealing water, see? Now, I've paid my bill in advance. But, you know, to bridge across a water meter over there, you know, is against the law. You get yourself in trouble doing that. And one of the things that you need to understand here, after you've figured out that signing a license is like checking into a mental hospital, is that when you're dealing with a bureaucracy over here, you want to make sure that you follow all the laws all the time. Now remember, Garden City has a law concerning zoning and planning. They have not zoned residential out of commercial. They have zoned commercial out of residential. I'm not breaking any laws. I'm not conducting any trade, commerce, business, or industry out of this office. Yes, it's an office. But it's not open to the public. I mean, we're not selling anything here. We're not doing business with anybody. So I thought we were on pretty good legal grounds, and so I called the water company, and I said, hey, listen, you've taken my meter out over here, and you ought not do that. And he called me everything but a white man. And our conversation did not bear fruit. Now, ordinarily, people would look at that and say, well, you can't beat City Hall. So I went out and I got a couple of milk cans for openers, and you know, if you've got a toilet with nasties in it, you just dump a little water down it and it'll flush. And I mean, you can bring in a bottle, you know, bottled water to make your coffee. I mean, you know, we don't need Garden City Water Company to make this thing work, but you know, it's kind of handy. You know, I kind of like to flip the handle on the toilet, and I kind of like to flip the handle on the faucet and get water, you know. So I called the Boise City Health Department after we figured out a plan here. We called the Boise City Water Department, or the Health Department, rather, and we said, now listen, if we didn't have any water in our home, would that pose a health hazard? And this lady didn't know. And I said, well, if there was nasties floating around in the toilet and we didn't have any water to flush the toilet, would that be a health hazard? Oh, my God, yes, yes, that's a health hazard. I said, well, would you come out here and inspect my home and see if there's a health hazard here? And then she said, well, be right out. And so she came out. And she was one of these ladies, a little chunky, you know. And she probably weighed about, you know, 250 along in there, and she is trying to dance around on these stilt shoes. Ain't nothing funnier than a fat woman on stilts. And she was kind of acting like Tinkerbell, you know. And she had her clipboard, and she came in, she saw those nasties in the toilet, and she wrote us up this big red card, pasted it on the front window, you know, big plate glass window, and she said, you have to have your water turned on. You got to fix this health hazard, and if you don't fix it by Tuesday, you got to vacate. Now, this is called a damage, and if you're gonna argue with somebody, you got to suffer a damage. And my damage is the eviction notice from the health department. Tuesday is the big day. So I sat down, wrote up a complaint, named Garden City as the defendant, sued him for $100,000, and I went down tripping to the 4th Judicial District, filed the suit, came back, delivered it to the city attorney, and he called me everything but a white man. So I could tell right away that we weren't going to get very far in negotiations with the water department or with the city attorney. So some more time went by. This was on a Thursday, and then a Friday came by, and then, of course, there's the Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday morning about 10 o'clock. See, we're getting ready to vacate. I know it's inconvenient as hell, but, you know, that's once you stake out your territory, boys and girls, you know, if you want to play the game, you know, you got to play the game. And the health department said, you got to be out of here now. We're going to suffer some big damages. And that's why I'm suing the city for $100,000. I mean, I'm in compliance with all their laws. I mean, I'm living in this. You know, I've got Chuck back here in the master bedroom, and I've got Peggy over here in bedroom number one, you know. And we got a kitchen back here in the back, and we got toilets up here, and you know, and I got my teenage phone from my daughter over here in her bedroom, and then I've got a phone in my bedroom, and listen. Guy said to me, he said, well, what do you call this room here? And I said, this is my bedroom, and he said, but there's no bed in here. And I said to him, well, excuse me, is there some law that requires that you have a bed in a bedroom? I mean, what if I put my dining room table and chairs in the bedroom, and I put my bed in the living room, and I went outside to go to the bathroom, and you know, is there some law that I'm violating here? And the guy said, well, no. Okay. As long as I'm in compliance with all the laws, you know. That's kind of the key to beating City Hall. You want to make sure that you're in compliance with all the laws. Boys and girls, I'm in compliance with all the laws. I'm paying $1,200 a month for a 2,400 square foot office, and I've converted it into a second residence. I'm living here. Paying my rent, paying my phone bill, paying my gas bill, paying my water bill in advance, and, you know, as far as I can tell, I'm in compliance with all the laws. I'm ready to argue this clear to the U.S. Supreme Court. About 10:30 Monday morning, my secretary came in and she said, Mayor Mockwitz is on the telephone. She wants to talk to you. Imagine, the mayor of Garden City, Idaho, wants to talk to George Gordon, live and direct. So I went into my bedroom, sat at my desk, and picked up my telephone, and I said, yes, Madam Mayor, what can I do for you? And so she said that she'd received this lawsuit, and she thought that it was pretty frivolous, and she said, well, can't we solve this problem? And I said, of course we can solve this problem. And she said, well, where can we talk? Now, normally I would talk to people down at Winchell's Donut House. I mean, if I was going to make a deal, I'd go over to the Outlaw and sit down over lunch and make a deal with you. And I thought, well, you know, I never dealt with a politician before, so I thought, well, where would you like to meet? And she said, well, could you come down to City Hall? And I said, I'll be right there. And I was on 42nd, and City Hall's on 72nd. It's 30 blocks. So I jumped in my car and went down 30 blocks, wheeled in, went into the City Hall. I was ushered into the mayor's office, and the mayor sat down with me, ordered coffee. Her secretary brought coffee, and here I am, sitting eyeball to eyeball with the mayor of Garden City, Idaho, population 5,000-8,000 people. Well, they ain't exactly like talking to Rudy Giuliani, but, you know, it's the mayor. And we talked some about the weather, and we talked about, you know, nonsense. And then she got down to the nitty-gritty, and she said, what do we need to do to resolve this? And I said, put my water meter back in. And so we talked about zoning and planning, and we talked about $50 deposit, and we talked about litigation from here to Washington. And I pointed out that the city of Garden City has a $5,000 deductible on their liability policy. See, in Idaho, every city and every county has to have a liability policy. then that means that if they turn that over to their insurance company, they got to pay the $5,000 deductible, and the insurance company is going to defend the city of Garden City from here to Washington, D.C. Now, it costs about $250,000 for an insurance company to argue a case from the trial court to the Supreme Court of the United States. It's $250,000. Now, what are we arguing over? We're arguing over a $50 interest-free loan called a deposit. Now, I'm not going to hire a lawyer. I'm going to represent myself pro se, and I'm going to go into court, and I'm going to argue this all the way to Washington, and I've done that four times in 22 years, and I've never spent more than $2,000 to argue a case clear to the U.S. Supreme Court. $2,000. So I'm going to spend $2,000, Garden City's going to spend $5,000, and the insurance company's going to spend $250,000 to find out whether or not George Gordon has to pay a $50 deposit, which is refundable when I leave town, assuming I pay my water bill. $50 interest-free loan is what they want from me, and I don't want to give it to them. And you know, the bottom line was that the city of Garden City didn't want to pay a $5,000 deposit to find, or deductible to find out whether or not I had to pay my $50 on that deposit. Now, it could be we could argue this case over the next 3 to 5 years, clear to Washington, the U.S. Supreme Court issues a decision and says, Gordon, pay your damn deposit. Well, I'd have to walk in, give them my $50 and say, well, okay, you win. Here's the $50. I mean, after the city of Garden City spent $5,000, insurance company spent $250,000. Boys and girls, they talk about leverage. Looked like to me that I had pretty good leverage in that case. The mayor agreed to me with me that I had pretty good leverage, and she said that she didn't want to argue about that. And that, now the insurance company never did get involved in it. And then you can about imagine what the claims manager of the insurance company is going to say when he gets this claim and says, what? You took this guy's meter out. He was evicted from his home because you tried to charge him a $50 deposit. But the city has failed to zone residential out of commercial? No. No, sir. That's the stuff of increased premiums. That's the stuff of we're going to cancel your insurance policy. And I'm sure that the mayor took a look at that and said, you know, we need to resolve this. Now, of course, some petty bureaucrat down here at the water department or some petty lawyer over here in the legal department, you know, they're sitting there saying, well, we don't care because we're bureaucrats. But when it gets right down to where the rubber meets the road, boys and girls, I'm in compliance with the law. And I said, you put my meter back in and we can all go home friends. So, to this day, Mayor Mockwitz and George Gordon are best buddies. Not drinking buddies, but best buddies. And I don't think that the city attorney or the water department has any use for me to this day. But they put my water meter back in, and I didn't pay them the $50. Of course, the big prize was I didn't pay the phone company $500 a month for a phone in my second residence either. Well, we're about out of time, boys and girls. I guess we got to call it a day. And let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.